to start off by asking a question. Why are you here? But more specifically, I want us to think about what is the first thing that comes to mind when I say the word church. It could be first thing that comes to your mind when you think of getting up to go to church or when you come to church. It could be the building. I know there's all different types of symbols and different ideas that come to our mind when we think of the word church. Some people think of holidays, especially if you grew up and you weren't, maybe your family didn't go to church regularly. Maybe the only time you showed up, I know my dad, we used to talk about how, for a while, it's like he showed up on Easter, showed up on New Year's, showed up for Christmas. There are some traditions, unlike the Church of Christ, where people show up, and they make sure they show up at least the first weekend of the month, because that's when they have communion. They don't actually observe the elements every Sunday. There's all these different ideas we can think of when we think of the word church. And the reason why I ask that is because when we think about God's church, I want us to move away from some of the landmarks and the different symbols of the church and really think about what the church actually is and what it's supposed to be. Now, a couple months ago, when visiting my family, I took the long way to go see my in-laws and see my family in Cincinnati. And I drove through this part of Kentucky that no one has probably ever heard of. It's called Turnersville. It's right outside of Stanford. And that's where my dad was born. That's where my grandfather and my grandmother on my dad's side are from. And what's interesting is this town used to be kind of a Twin Cities type of deal, where you had one side of town, was Stanford, and it's where all the affluent people were, and Turnersville were kind of the poor rural people. And there's nobody there anymore. But when I went back to look, and we were driving trying to find the place, my dad, he said, I can't really remember. It was State Route something and turn here. And I'm thinking, that's not helping me, because I haven't been there literally since my grandfather passed in 1991. But he said, but I can tell you, you know you've gone too far if you pass that little church up on the hill. It was a landmark for him. And for a lot of people, especially in rural areas like that, that's church. It's like you have these landmarks. And there was this Methodist one, he said, but a couple miles back, there was this Baptist one. What I want to do over the next few weeks is really have us examine what the church is and what it means. Because what I want to challenge us to do is consider that the church is not the landmark, it's not the building, it's not this organization, but church is a family. Church is a family. And when you think about family, it gives a whole different context, because all of us have our own immediate families and our extended families, and we think of different things when we think of our family, because everybody has something different about their family. So the title of the sermon is Family Affair. I want us to consider what we're building here. As we've been talking about the plans, and as we've been talking about preparing ourselves, as we've been talking about transition, I want us to really consider, what is all the preparation and the planning, and what is all the things that God is doing in our hearts, in our own little church family? I want us to really consider that what we're building here is not an organization. It's not some organization to be greater, but it is a family. Now, I don't know if you all can see this, but I borrowed the title of the sermon from this show. It was called Family Affair. Some of you all, if you're older than me, I know you probably remember. I see a couple of you smiling. But, this is somewhat of a blended kind of nuanced family you see here. We think about television families, Some of us think of this family, the Waltons. Yes. I know Ben's like, I don't remember. But most of you do. Exactly. And then some of you guys remember this from back in the 80s. This is a review of Family Ties, which you can't know Family Ties if you didn't first watch This Family, which came on at 8 o'clock, which was The Cosby Show. And we think of all these television families and these different things that maybe family means something different to you. Maybe, I mean, we have all different types of families we saw on TV. But when we think of families, this guy right here, I don't think he's faking. I think he really is tired. He had sextuplets, you know, quite a big family, especially if you figure one shot, one try, and you have six kids just like that. And, you know, the wife is happy because she's not holding. See, she's smiling. Everybody's smiling with him. And then you've got this family. This is a couple in Great Britain who they're said to have currently the largest live birth family, where this woman actually birthed these 18 children. Once upon a time, families were different, and it wasn't that uncommon that you have that many children. It's only kind of been a fairly recent phenomenon where families have just a handful of kids. They stopped like me and my wife did, you know. Now the significance of this picture is that this is her extended family. This is not only just her, you know, nuclear, like her mom and dad and immediate siblings, but this is her grandparents and uncles and all different types of people. And in a lot of cultures, what you find is that they don't, when they say family, they don't just think of their family as being, okay, you, your wife, or your husband, or whoever, and then you have a couple of kids, but they actually consider their cousins, like the man will consider his brother or his sister, that is a part of their family too. I had a roommate who was from Ghana, and I remember he kept talking about all these brothers and sisters, and I'm thinking, how many children did your mother have, right? Well, he said, no. You would call them your cousins in America. And Yah was his name. But we talked a lot about family. And so what I want us to really think about, I'm going to do something that's kind of fun, kind of lighthearted. If you were to get together with my mom, she would, if you came to her house, she would show you her family by opening up this photo album. And you would see tons of like different photos, different people. Relatives, some who are gone now. How many of you guys recognize this dude? I'm sure if you look at the shoulders, the biceps. This is me when I was a few months old. This is my mom. And I think I was about 4 months old in this picture. It was obviously hot. Maybe I was a little bit older because I was not wearing a shirt, but anyway, this is me, and this is actually my family. This was about 1983. I was 8 years old. You'll see I have two older sisters, Michelle, she's the one who lives in New York, Christine, she lives in Cincinnati. There's my mom, my dad, and there's my little sister, Lisa. She was about 3 in this picture, so she was a little bit younger than Kendall. Now, we keep going. This is us now, fast forwarded. This was actually a couple years ago. This was when we were celebrating my mom's 60th birthday. This is one of my favorite pictures because this is actually my dad when I was 2. And you see that cake. I thought that was my cake, like the whole thing. And this is one of my favorite pictures because I love seeing my dad. My dad doesn't smile a lot. I was talking to somebody about this. But I love it when I see my dad smile. I always thought my dad was an incredibly handsome man. And it was interesting because you'll see me there licking my fingers after digging into the cake. This is a picture of me and my mom when I was cutting the cake, and my sister was very excited. Now, you fast forward, this is a picture of the start of my family. This is when my wife and I got married. This is us at the beginning of the family, and this is the first offspring of my clan. This is William's first birthday. Now, you'll see this birthday party we had. We were living in Atlanta at the time, and the significance of this, you'll see this lady right there. Her name is Elaine Jameson. Now, I'll come back to her because it's very important what we're talking about the family and how it relates to God's family. We see her again here. She was William's first daycare provider. She was the one who essentially raised him because, you know, I had several stores in Atlanta. I was working. My wife, she's a career woman. She was working. And so unlike the old days where, you know, you had your mama or somebody in the house or maybe you stayed home while your husband went out to work, my wife, she went out to work. And so after her maternity leave was up, we had to figure out what to do. We see here, this is the second offspring. This is Kendall. Kendall used to do this thing where she would hold my face when she would give me a kiss. She would just grab me. This is her first birthday. We were celebrating. And plenty of icing. She was a little bit confused, I think, right here, and how much sugar she was getting. Because we didn't, until Kendall was about two, she never had sugar like candy or anything sweet like that. And this is Cherise holding them. This is when we first brought Kendall home. Now, I bring up all these pictures, and I want us to turn to Matthew chapter 12 right now. I bring up all these pictures because a lot of times when we reflect on God's church, it's important for us to understand it from the context of a family. In Matthew chapter 12 and verse 46, starting there, it says, when Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you. He replied to him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? Pointing to his disciples, he said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Now, there's a few things I really want to draw out of this, but we see here Jesus making a very powerful statement about who his family is. Now, in no way was this a diss or him somehow saying that he was rejecting his birth family, but he was making a much larger point, and that's where I want us to start here. Our obedience to God is what relates us as a family. It's what binds us together. You know, we know that song, Bind Us Together Again. Our obedience is what makes us related, not our membership. Because there's a lot of times when, you know, you can have your name attached to something, but you're not really related to it. People know us by our characteristics. Now, if you go back and you look, and I didn't obviously have time, but if you were to go back and look at pictures of my dad when he was my age or back when I was younger, when we were relative age, you could see the resemblance. But what Jesus is talking about here is us showing a family resemblance by our character, by the way that we behave, by the way that we not only treat one another, but how we treat others. Are we known by our lifestyle in Christ? See, there are a lot of people like where my dad spent most of his childhood growing up in this little suburb of Cincinnati called Glendale, that they may not know, because my dad's been gone for so long, they may not necessarily know who I am by just looking at me. But they might think that I look a little bit familiar because they knew the Craig family before. And so based on the way I act, maybe the way I sound, maybe the way I talk, they might be able to pick up on it and say, wait a minute, aren't you Miss Irene's grandson? Aren't you Leroy's son? Wait a minute. I remember I went to school with Melvin, who's my dad's brother. You all are related, aren't you? See, a lot of times we forget that being a part of that family, people recognize us physically by our features, our characteristics, but in God's church, they know us by our lifestyle. One of the things that we have to always remind ourselves is that when it comes to being Christ's disciple, it's all built on relationships. It's all about our relationships. And our relationships start right here with us as a church. And I'll come back to that in a minute here. And it was interesting, if you notice, there's no mention of his father. He didn't say, you know, at the very end, he says, whoever, in verse 50, whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. You know, when he says, who is my mother and who are my brothers? We all have the same father. We all have the same father, which means that, and we talked a little bit about this in Sunday school, but how people viewed, in society, how people viewed your worth and your value, a lot of that always came from your father. You know, they talk about being in your father's house. Being, you know, when you go through the genealogy, it goes through and it talks about this person's father and this person's father and this person's father. But in Christ, we all have the same father. Now, I want to come back to a couple of those things, but I want to ask, do we see the resemblance? When we think of Christ's church, when we think of what it means for us to be disciples and follow him, where he says, whoever does the will of my Father, are we doing the will of the Father? Because that's what makes us a church. That's what identifies us as a church. Now, I told you about this lady here. Her name is Elaine Jameson. And the interesting thing about her was that Miss Elaine came at a time when we were kind of isolated. Our nearest relatives, between my wife and myself, were maybe 450 miles away. So if I got a flat tire, if I was late picking the kids up from daycare, if I was in trouble, had a bind financially or something, whatever it was, maybe just emotionally was down, William, for the first 2 years of his life, he knew who my mother was and he knew who my dad was, but he thought this was his grandmother. He owned her in that way because she treated him like family. She took care of him and loved him like family. We needed that, and we didn't know how we were going to get it. We were new to not only being married, but relatively new to Atlanta, and then on top of that, we were certainly new as parents. And she showed us the ropes. She helped us out. She was invaluable to my wife. This guy, his name is Casey Holmes Jr. He came into my store, on Clifton Church Road one day. He said he needed service. And he just looked at me, he said, you look like you're hurting. I mean, I don't know how you can just see that from somebody's eyes, but I certainly was. And it wasn't because of business. It wasn't because things were necessarily going poorly. But spiritually, I was hurting. One of these days, I'll tell you the story when it matters a little more. But he was the person who ended up marrying my wife and I. We had a network of friends and family and church members and people that at one point, it hurt us pretty bad because they rejected us. And he essentially, on a spiritual level, took us in. Now, this is my best friend, Carlos. Carlos is an interesting story because we met when I was in high school. And Carlos had, Carlos was wild, but Carlos had a full ride, a full scholarship to the University of Cincinnati. And when we graduated from high school, we were both going to go there. And I decided I was going to instead go to Columbus, moved to Columbus and go to school at Ohio State, start a ministry there. And so Carlos said he was going to go. I said, Carlos, what are you talking about? You got a full scholarship. Why would you do something like that? He said, well, I'll do, you know, I'll take out loans. I'll do whatever I have to do, but I want to be where you are. I want to do this together. He said, I want to help you in this effort. And Carlos, some of you may remember, he passed last year. He had multiple organ failure. He had liver problems. But Carlos literally stuck with me when nobody else would. This is my other friend. I call him my brother. This is Dusty. You'll see he's sitting there with the kids on his lap. They're reading off the tablet. He's reading them a story. And Dusty, whenever I would come back from Columbus and I drive back to Cincinnati, Dusty would come and he would, I remember him and his mom, she actually came and lived with us for a while in Atlanta, but Dusty would make sure that Carlos and I had enough food, enough gas to get back. He would make sure that we were okay. He would even drive up from time to time when he wasn't in class. He would drive up on that day to Columbus, which is about 120 miles away from Cincinnati. He would drive up and bring friends just to support us when we'd have our meetings, when we'd have different things. This is William being really comfortable with Uncle Dusty. We were at IHOP, and he was just climbing all over him. He became a part of my family. This is my old youth group. This is us after winning a basketball tournament. There's a guy over here with a really big knee brace. That would be me. And this is my friend that I've known for years. His name is Bruce. I recently got reacquainted with Bruce, and I saw him again a couple years ago in D.C. when he came to visit his mom. I've known Bruce since I was about 10 years old. And I remember as very young men, Bruce was the one guy who he committed himself to Christ around the same time that I did. And we held each other accountable. And as you saw in my family portrait, I don't have any brothers. But these people were like brothers to me. One last one. These two ladies here are Mia and Riley. Now, Mia and Riley don't have a brother, and so they decided to adopt William as their brother. As you can see, Mia's very serious about it. And they would come over. They would play. They would invite us to the parties. They would invite us to these functions, and they treat us like family. You'll see in this picture, I'm sorry, I don't have the picture, but their parents really took us in. The kids called them Grandpa Rob and Grandma Diane. I want to look in John chapter 19, where it says, starting in verse 25, near the cross of Jesus stood his mother, his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. I pointed out earlier how we talked about, if you were a woman back then, it wasn't just the loss of your son or the loss of your husband, but it meant that you were left to fend for yourself. There was no Social Security or some type of safety net that would take care of you. You had to be attached to some man or some family that would provide for you. And what we see here is the example that Christ set for us as a church. Even though he was on a cross, even though he was dying, literally bleeding out, he cared enough to see that his mother's needs got met. A lot of times when we're struggling, when we're going through something, the real challenge of our faith, the real challenge of our being the disciples following in Jesus' example is, are we willing to sacrifice and love and care for and give to when it's hard, maybe when we're distracted by our own problems, maybe we're sick, but yet we still care about that other person? See, being here for the past few years, I can think to myself, you know what? I remember, and I always think to myself, man, I guess Trafina had to work because I didn't see her last Sunday, you know? Or I'm thinking about the Ray Bucks, and I'm like, okay, we were talking about it this morning. When are the Ray Bucks going to leave to go back to Florida? Or, you know, talking to the Huffmans. I wonder how Justin's doing. Has he sent a letter? Have you talked to him? You know, we ask about, you know, Sharon's granddaughter. You know, we're waiting for the updated baby pictures. You know, I think of, you know, all of the different ways. When we think of each other, it's like, do we actually care enough to say, you know what? I want to make sure that Pat's okay. Now, Pat's always here, but one time I didn't see Pat, and it was just like, red flag. I got to find out what's going on. And she was fine. But the point is, do we care enough about one another to say, I want to look after and meet my brother and my sister's needs, regardless of my struggle? John was the one person that stayed after all the other disciples scattered. He was the one who was beloved, and it was important for the Lord to look down and see that somebody stayed. When we're at our deepest, darkest despair, when we're in the worst place possible, it's important that we have someone who's there with us so that we're not alone. We see this example with John and with Jesus' mother. In Proverbs 18, it talks about a man who has unreliable friends will come to ruin, but there's a friend that sticks closer to a brother. Are we that friend? Are we that friend that sticks closer than a brother or a sister? What does it take for us to abandon our family? We know, even though it wasn't stated here, but we know that the other disciples scattered and they fled. A lot of times we think of the ideal family. I was showing all those television families, and we think of all these picture-perfect ideas of a family. Well, we know that's not true, because we all have family members in our immediate family or even in distant family who, frankly, they get on your nerves, or you just don't like them, or maybe they have a problem that they refuse to deal with. Maybe they're it's a constant struggle. It's a constant weight. But does our unity overcome and allow us to not abandon people? We know the example of the son, the prodigal son, who left. And we see how the father reacted when he came back. Is that how we view our family? It's also important to understand, even though I already said it, everybody doesn't have a great immediate family. Everybody didn't grow up in great family circumstances. I know I didn't always have great family circumstances. And so those different people that I was showing you in those pictures, they meant so much to me because they stepped in the gap. When my parents sometimes fell short, or my sisters fell short, or whenever I didn't get and receive nurturing, love, different things, those people stood in the gap, and they showed that, just like Jesus said, they were willing to do the things that Jesus did. Therefore, they were his family. But when we think about abandoning, and abandonment issues are very real. Nobody likes the pressure of feeling like, oh my gosh, if I'm not perfect, if I fail, if I fall short, people are going to abandon me. See, this is what we're building here. We're building a family that believes differently. And we also see that Jesus took his responsibilities very seriously. His responsibility, it's believed by most scholars that at this point, Joseph, who was Mary's husband, had long since passed. We see that Jesus, being the oldest son of all of Mary's children, it was on him, the burden, the responsibility, the duty was on him to take care of his mother, more so than even like his sisters, who we know he had, because his sisters, they could then go and marry. But we see here that Jesus took his responsibility seriously. How seriously do we take our responsibility to our brothers and sisters? How seriously do we take the duty of being a part of this family? If you will turn to Acts chapter 2, we'll look at this very quickly before I close. It says in Acts chapter 2, I'm showing you this picture because this is a guy standing next to me. His name is Shaba Isaiah Travis. And some years ago, right after I moved back to Cincinnati, I started a mentoring program. And so I would work with these kids. And the reason why I started it was because one of my friends who also went to TSU with me, she was a part of a group that mentored little girls and young women. And she was working with these two girls in his family, but this little boy, who was about 8 years old, I guess, at the time, seven, eight, nine, something like that, he had nowhere to go because there was no program for him, and he felt left out. And so she said, well, can you spend some time with him? And then that turned into, can you spend some time with his other friend, and can you spend some time with this friend? And before you know it, me and Dusty and Carlos, we're running around picking up all these little boys, showing them how to work on cars, showing them how to clean things, fix things, just spending time with them. And so I started this organization, the Fountain of Youth. Well, what happens is years later, right before Sharice and I got married, Shaba got in some trouble. He was about 14 at the time. And it was some legal trouble. He was getting a lot of fights, having a lot of problems. And they were going to send him to juvenile detention. And his mother called me, and very contrite, but she said, I feel like I failed. I don't know what to do with him. And so I said, well, I'm kind of in the middle of something. You know, I'm kind of in the middle of getting married and running a business and all these things. But you know what? Send him anyway. So we took guardianship of Shaba. He moved down to Atlanta with us. And the interesting thing was that Shaba, it was an adjustment period for him because he said, I remember telling him, he said he'd never been treated like a son. He didn't know what it was like to be treated like a son by his dad because he didn't have a relationship with his dad. He was actually born while his mom was in prison. And so his grandmother had him for the first couple years of his life. And then when his mother got out, it was a big struggle. This is Miss Elaine again with William. This is Grandpa Rob and Grandma Diane. When my wife and I, before we moved here, we were living in Dayton, Ohio, and there were times when it was a bit of a financial pinch, and they just literally showed up and just said, hey, take the money. And I'm thinking to myself, I knew. I said, you all don't have it to give. They said, it doesn't matter. We have to give right now. We know you'll give it. We know that we can, and even if you don't, that's okay. And as you can see, the family resemblance here, we're not exactly the same. That's Sarah, that's a good friend of her, mine, and her brother Aaron. We met each other back in college, and that's Mia. She was pregnant with Riley. And then we see here, Reverend Holmes again, that is his daughter, Kim. Kim is like my sister now. When we look at Acts chapter 2, starting in verse 42, it says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Most of us have read this scripture countless times, but I wanted to come back and look at this because when we think about what it means to be together and have everything in common, that's what believers do. That's what those who understand the importance and the impact of Christ do. Interestingly enough, as I was driving here today, my wife sends me a text and she says, why are you wearing this suit? we're supposed to be unified. And I thought, unified? Well, what she was saying, see, you all know Jamesetta, this is her last Sunday here. She's going to be leaving to go back. And she made these lovely shirts and outfits for us. And everybody's wearing, my wife and I, we have this matching thing going on. And I'm wearing a suit, and she said, no. She said, we need to be unified. Sometimes what's most important is that we be unified. When we come up here and we take communion, when we share this with one another, when we come together for a meal or to celebrate something for someone, it's the unity that matters. And a lot of times we have to sacrifice something small, something big, for the sake of unity. You think about what it means to be devoted. It says they were devoted to the teaching, the breaking of bread, the prayer, the fellowship. Now, my grandmother used to, I hear stories now, she's gone, but I hear stories about how my grandmother used to prepare meals for the family, and she would be the last one to eat. My aunt told me, I'll never forget, she told me that she used to think that my grandmother liked neck bones. But in reality, she wanted to make sure they had enough, and so she would eat what was left. And the one thing that they never picked up was the neck bone. But that's what being devoted is, you know. My grandmother, she sacrificed and literally lived. And this is not something unique to my family. There are plenty of you all who you save up, you avoid getting something nice for yourself because you want to make sure that your son or your daughter has enough money to go to college, make sure that they have enough money for tuition, to maybe get a house, because that's special to you. Some of you make sacrifices because you have a parent that needs to come live with you and live in your home. Maybe it's not even a parent or a child. Maybe it's just another family member that you make these sacrifices because you're devoted to them. You care enough about them. But when it comes to the church, when it comes to our church family, are we willing to make those same sacrifices? Are we that devoted to one another? Because that's the reflection of our belief and our willingness to be disciples and follow his example. As I said, you sacrifice to meet the needs of the family. And it's important to understand at the very end of this, it says, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Healthy families grow. Healthy families grow. If we're going to be able to have an impact on those who need help, those who need love, those who need to see God in their life, those who need to come to Christ, we have to understand that we have to be healthy. And part of being healthy is that we look to meet one another's needs. We see this example in Acts 2. They had everything in common. It didn't mean they were all the same. But they were healthy in that they had a healthy understanding that this is what it takes for God's message to reach a lost world. Do we have healthy habits when it comes to our church family? I'll close quickly by asking just a few questions. Are we willing to sacrifice for our family? And sacrifice isn't always money or even sometimes giving possessions, as we see there in Acts 2, but sacrificing means sacrificing our time. Sometimes sacrificing means you have to do something you don't want to do. You're tired, but you do it anyway. And we know this because those of us who have loving family, we know what it means when you're tired, but you still get up, you stay up to help your kids with the homework, or you know, they're sick, and you nurse them back to health. Do we do those same things for our godly family? Do you love like Jesus loved his family? Jesus. And when I say this, it's important to understand when I talk about Jesus and how he loved his family, Jesus took responsibility for loving his family. Do we see it as someone else's job to look after the needs of somebody in our church family? Or do we see it as, what can I do to help? Maybe I can't do it all, but I can do something. What can I contribute? I was really encouraged because Michael, a couple weeks ago, he said, hey, he sent me a text. He said, look, I love the church and I love what you all have done for me. Can maybe I just come around and help clean up? Maybe I can just come around and be the church janitor. Be there to facilitate putting the chairs back in order and making sure that everything is in place. Because his heart, he wants to be a part of his family. There are so many people out there who we know because we've had it. We've experienced it. They come from broken families or families that are not so great. They need this family. They need us to treat people like Jesus treated his family. Do we value the time that we get with our family? When we think of our family, we think of what it means to be here on Wednesday night for Bible study. Be here for Sunday school. I know you all had a great time going to Sight and Sound yesterday. When you think about those moments, it's like going through all those pictures I just showed you of my family. You capture these moments. You remember the unity. You remember the experiences. You remember when that person, maybe it was you, who lost a loved one, and people rallied around you, and they comforted you. Do we value that time? Are we ready to grow as a family? We know that all these things are what it's going to take for us to grow as a family. Are we ready to do that? Because that's all this preparation talk and all this getting our hearts right so that we can reach people. That's what it comes down to. Us growing as a family means we have to behave and love and give like a loving family would. And do you have a family? If you've never given your life to Christ, if you've never been one who has accepted the Lord and his calling for your life, maybe you've seen it. Maybe you've watched it. But have you actually heard the message? Have you actually believed the message? Decided, I'm going to repent and I'm going to live like Jesus did. And been baptized. That's what gets you started. It's kind of like Shaba. When Shaba moved in, we had a lot of paperwork and formalities to go through. We love Shaba, but Shaba made it official when he came to move with us. Trust me, we filed him on our taxes. And it's like he was so grateful to be a part of that family, a part of something that he never knew existed. If you've never given your life to Christ, there is something about this family that's here for you that maybe you didn't know existed. But overall, we need, as a family, to do our part. Are you a family man first, family woman first? Do you want to be a part of this family, be a part of God's family? I challenge you today to commit your life to Christ. And be ready to serve and love like a healthy family would do. Stand and sing with me, please.